Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It is September 16th, and I don't think we're quite to technically fall as a part of the year, but I am looking forward to it. Walker Wildman, Chris Woodward, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Fall is my favorite time of the year because growing up, it was always, in New England, was always leaves changed and became sweater weather and football and all that. And, you know, September hadn't really turned out the way I'd kind of hoped down where we're living, down in Mississippi. It's been brutally hot.
Yeah, my wife saw something on Facebook last night, and she pointed it out to me. Somebody had posted, "It's fall in Mississippi, y'all." You know what that means? Absolutely nothing.
We're closer to not having to mow our yard for a few months.
That's true. Our grass is dying, and I love it.
It's so nice that last time, maybe in October, sometimes early November, where you that last mow, and then it starts getting 40 degrees, and, you know.
It is, and the grass stays short all during the winter.
Yeah, you just park the mower for the last time, and you just like, yes.
Get
3 or 4 months off.
I love it. Love that time of the year, and look forward to our 2 weeks of fall down here where we have cool weather. This is all just meaningless drivel.
Yeah.
This is a stream of consciousness, really, for me. So
yeah, I took garbage out on Christmas Eve, last Christmas Eve, I think it was. I was wearing shorts and flip-flops.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I was married. I got my wife and I were married in 2015, December 12th. And it was 65 degrees on our wedding day in December.
Wow. So you've been married now. It would be 4 years coming up.
All right.
Yep.
Wow.
This December will be 4 years.
Time flies. Well, anyway, Tim Wildman, who usually is in the captain's chair, is out today, filling in for him. So we're going to go on with the news in his absence. And fortunately, nothing important is happening around the world, so nothing important.
Absolutely not. I mean, it was like, what are we going to talk about today?
Yeah, get us started, Chris.
Well, Walker mentioned, you know, his wedding anniversary coming up. Certainly, a lot of people do get married this time of year, and two ladies in the state of Arizona that have been trying to service men and women getting married to one another in holy matrimony. They're Joanna Duca and Brianna Koski. Now, these ladies live in the Phoenix area, and Phoenix, the city of Phoenix in Arizona, has one of those ordinances that says if you do it for this couple, you got to do it for all couples. Joanna and Brianna are artists, and they do hand lettering and all kinds of invitations and crafty kind of stuff that people would special order for a wedding. In this particular case, though, Joanna and Brianna have an issue with the city of Phoenix's ordinance, and they have lawyered up with Alliance Defending Freedom, and they are in what's called a preemptive challenge against the city of Phoenix. This is a Jack Phillips-style case. I think a lot of people are familiar
with
these
two ladies are Christians, right?
They're two, yeah. They actually met at a coffee shop and went into business not long after that. This is a preemptive challenge. They haven't been brought up on charges yet. Their argument is, if this ordinance from the city of Phoenix is allowed to stand, it's going to infringe on our rights. And this ordinance actually goes above and beyond what Jack Phillips faces, what Baronelle Stutzman faced, the Bakers in Oregon, things like that. In the city of Phoenix, you could actually be fined and put in jail.
So there are, my understanding is there are criminal penalties attached to this. Now this, like you said, this is a step above what other cities have done with their non-discrimination policies that usually allow for fines, civil penalties. You can go to jail. This is incredible.
And the reason we're talking about this on a program called Today's Issues is because later today in Arizona, the state Supreme Court is going to decide whether or not these ladies should be allowed to do business as they see fit, or should they have to follow with what the government says.
Yeah, this has jail time attached to it, this ordinance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Alliance Defending Freedom is now that is a great group. They are Christian. They defend the First Amendment rights, the religious liberty rights of Christians all across the country, and they've had some pretty good success in upholding the constitutional rights that Christians have.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, this is smart on behalf of ADF and these two ladies there in Phoenix because, you know, the other side uses preemptive lawsuits all the time.
Right.
Almost all of their lawsuits are preemptive because there's been no harm done. So the ACLU uses it pretty much every week against President Trump, literally every week against President Trump for various executive orders he does, even sometimes before he writes the executive order. But this is good. ADF and they have a pretty good chance of winning this.
Yeah, and ADF is based in Arizona, so you would think if anybody knows what the laws are in the state of Arizona or Phoenix specifically, things like that, it would be the state-based institution. They do have offices everywhere. But
okay, so now we were talking about this in our story meeting, and I've heard some rumblings about this for a while, but I wasn't really paying close attention. So this has worked its way up to the Arizona Supreme Court, or did they go directly to the
Supreme
Court?
It's worked itself up.
Okay.
Some lower courts have actually ruled in Phoenix's favor. So this would be the state justices, who I think are elected, as are most states, weighing in on this. And then depending on how things go today, we could see it make its way into the federal system. Who knows?
Well, I think we've known for a while that the Supreme Court is going to have to come down definitively on one side or the other of these issues. Now, there is a Michigan case that's similar but not the same.
Right.
As these wedding service provider cases, because the claim for those who bake cakes or, you know, do floral arrangements or photographers, that it is more of a artistic expression when you're designing things for a wedding. The case in Michigan involves, I think it's a transgender case where you have an employer who happened to own a funeral home who's a Christian, and he doesn't want a man coming in dressed as a woman. I think that's the core of the case. That's a little bit different, but the Supreme Court's going to have to deal with these kinds of issues because they're not going away, and these kinds of non-discrimination policies run right smack into the First Amendment.
Yeah.
We'll find out here in Phoenix.
For sure. Building off what you said there, and we were talking about it in our story meeting for One News Now after the TI meeting this morning. The Supreme Court never actually said whether Jack had to make the cake, Jack Phillips.
Right.
They literally just said, well, Colorado was unfair to you.
Yes, because they demonstrated hostility to Jack Phillips' religious beliefs, kind of left the door open that if a state doesn't show that kind of overt hostility, they may be off the hook.
Sure.
So what I'm saying is the Supreme Court's going to have to actually answer the question
that
they avoided.
They're going to have to pick a side.
Yes, that they avoided with the Jack Phillips case. So we should find out something today, or is this something where they might rule in a week or so?
ADF has sent out a press release saying they're going to have a press conference today at noon Arizona time. So today
they're expecting a potential ruling today?
All right, good. Well, we will keep our listeners informed if we have a follow-up tomorrow on the program. But One News Now, check onenewsnow.com, and you should have updates as we find out.
The other story, this very well could have been a lead story. You heard it at the top of the hour if you were listening to Rusty Pugh on American Family News, the radio version of onenewsnow.com. But in recent days, there was an attack on a Saudi oil project, oil fields, things like that. The Saudis still, even in 2019, produce a lot of oil. We have been getting a lot of our own oil, but the Saudis still produce a lot of the world's oil, and an oil project of the Saudis was attacked. It remains to be seen exactly who is responsible. It could be somebody from Iran. It could be somebody from Iraq. It could be some rebels that the Saudis are at war with in Yemen. But nonetheless, President Trump says the U.S. is locked and loaded to respond to whoever might have been responsible for this. The good news is today's national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $2.56, according to AAA. That's below what we were paying on this day last year and certainly far cheaper than what we were paying a year ago at $2.84. All that to say, you could see an increase in price because while we do get a lot of our oil now from ourselves, anything that happens to oil affects the global market and therefore trickles down to us. So you could at some point, at a time of year when gas prices tend to fall substantially, you could see prices kind of remain the same or maybe even go up depending on what just happened there in the Middle East.
So and the prices generally go down this time of year because of summer travel usually is is peak season. You have holiday travel, but that's, you know, a weekend here or a weekend there. So now my understanding is this oil project, as you called it, in Saudi Arabia, but they have shut down some of their oil fields. And am I correct? I think 5% of the world's oil supply is affected by this. So
yeah, USA Today uses that figure.
Yeah.
You know, I'm speculating here, which most people are, but, you know, the U.S. and Saudi Arabia are pointing the finger at Iran, or at least Iran-related actors, and I don't see why that's not true, because Iran is hurting right now because of the sanctions. So they're pretty desperate for some kind of breakthrough, some kind of attention. And Iran keeps saying, we're ready to fight. We're ready for war. So I don't know why Iran would be so, you know, trigger happy and using all this rhetoric if they're not the ones doing this stuff. And it seems to be a trend that it's all of these attacks are targeting the oil supply, whether it's seizing tankers, blowing up tankers, or blowing up the oil fields in Saudi Arabia. I mean, it's all connected. Whether it's all the same people, I don't know. But I don't know who else would be sophisticated enough to have access to drones and these mines that attach to ships and all this, be able to do it all.
Yeah, some militants or terrorists, I don't know how they would make it out of Yemen to, you know, go into Saudi Arabia and do something like this when they, you know, run on cash and whatever else they manage to steal and sell to people. It would make sense that, you know, Iran would be interested in doing something like this, because prior to the Iran nuclear deal that the Obama administration negotiated, Iran did not provide a lot of oil to various parts of the country based on the fact, and that began back in the late 70s before you and I were born. And part of the Iran nuclear deal involved the nation of Iran to start selling oil again. And that is, you know, part of the bread and butter of their economy. So based on that, it would make sense, or at least it would add water to the argument that maybe Iran was responsible here because they want to disrupt what, you know, their Arab neighbors are getting in on.
We have to remember that Iran is not a rational actor on the world stage like China and Russia are, because China and Russia, they like to play with fire, but they're not going to burn the house down because they have their own interest. But Iran is ideologically driven from the Muslim belief system, and so the West is the infidel. They want to go to war with Israel and the West. They say death to America. That's their chant. So, you know, some would say, why would Iran try to go to war? Well, because they're ideologically driven.
Yeah, and they have some apparently some odd kind of what we would call end time theological beliefs.
Yes.
They believe a war with Israel and a war with the West
will usher in the end times.
Yeah, their kind of version of the end times and the last imam, or you know, the 13th imam. I forget how this theology works. But to your point, Walker, they believe that would all be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not necessarily a rational actor on the world stage, like countries like China and Russia and others that want to survive. They believe maybe not surviving is something good that Allah would be pleased with. So it's hard to figure what motivations they might have. Now, I'm guessing that Saudi Arabia, the U.S. is probably helping, because these kinds of explosions, you have little bits of pieces that you have to try to put together, see if you can find something that identifies. If it's a drone, there's some speculation that maybe cruise missiles were fired from Iraq. So all that kind of has to be investigated, because war leads to loss of life, including could be U.S. servicemen and servicewomen who could die in any kind of armed exchange with Iran. So we're going to have to follow this. But Iran is a troublemaker. I don't mean that to sound like a kid at school. They are playing for keeps, and they are backing the rebels, the Houthi rebels in Yemen, and Saudi Arabia is at war with them. Yemen is right to the south of Saudi Arabia. So all kinds of bad actors in that part of the world. And now the ante has been upped.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see what comes next.
All right. Another story, this one began kind of playing out over the weekend as well. And it's hard to believe this, but we're a year ago today was when the Christine Blasey Ford stuff started coming out about Brett Kavanaugh, then Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. This was the sexual assault allegation made against him. And over the weekend, leading up to the one-year anniversary of this, the New York Times puts out some information claiming there was an allegation made, there was some more witnesses that were able to corroborate, or whatever the correct legal term might be, this story. As a result of the New York Times reporting, air quotes, all the Democrats running for president, plus independent Bernie Sanders, started saying, well, we need to impeach Brett Kavanaugh. No, he needs to be held accountable. We need to impeach Brett Kavanaugh and the man who nominated him for the Supreme Court, all these things. Kamala Harris took no time saying, I sat in on those hearings, and he straight up lied to us, and all these things. And then it comes out that the New York Times has updated their story to the point where the accuser does not recall the alleged assault. That was how Fox News put it. Ed saw this on National Review. The New York Times anti-Kavanaugh bombshell is actually a dud. Basically, this was information that was already out there. People did investigate, all these other things. But you have people that literally want their finger on the button, running this country, quick to Twitter, doing exactly what they criticize President Trump of doing all the time. He goes on Twitter and says all these things, and here we find out there's nothing to this.
Yeah, this is another one of those bizarre instances where the New York Times, and they have issued a correction.
They've had a rough month.
They have had
the
a
New
rough
York
month.
Times.
This is apparently a former classmate of Kavanaugh, Max Steyer, I think is how you pronounce his name. And he reportedly told the FBI that at a party in college, he saw Brett Kavanaugh. Folks, we're trying to be as careful as we can here about this, but expose himself to a young lady, and his friends apparently kind of pushed him. I'm not even going to get all the gory details here. Well, as it turns out, the woman who was apparently victimized says, I don't remember that. And this is a disaster for the New York Times. And to your point, Chris, it's really a disaster for these Democrats who are saying we need to impeach a sitting Supreme Court justice.
Yeah.
You know, I think several years ago, I don't know when this happened, but at some point there were various court rulings that basically made it to where you can say anything about a public figure, even if it's false, and you're protected from lawsuit. I don't know when that happened, what the court case is.
I've heard other people
But that's why President Trump can't sue these media outlets who knowingly publish false information. I don't know when that happened, what it had to do with exactly, but this is getting to a point where you almost wish you had that kind of leverage. Like, I don't know whether Brett Kavanaugh would sue if he could. Probably not, because he's on the Supreme Court, but I just think these public figures should have some kind of way to make this right, because it used to be where there was actual morals where you didn't publish fake stuff, but it's getting to the point where they publish fake stuff, and before they publish it, they know they don't have enough evidence to corroborate.
Yeah,
I think the legal standard is for both libel and slander. Okay, is that you have to knowingly publish something that's false and do so with malice, intent to harm.
Which is a high bar to meet.
Yeah, and you guys, as you guys have noted, the Supreme Court has said that that bar is very, very high when you're dealing with public figures. Mm-hmm. So you think about newspapers / websites like the National Enquirer that publish stuff all the time, used to, you know, about this television star, this movie star, they're having an affair, or this famous woman has an alien baby. I mean, just bizarre stuff. And you go, how do you get away with that? Well, that's because for public figures, the bar is so high. Mm-hmm. For ordinary citizens, the bar is still lower. But how do you prove malice? Like on the New York Times. The New York Times would defend themselves and say, we thought this was newsworthy. We thought it was true. We didn't know it was false at the time, and we certainly don't have malice against Brett Kavanaugh. Right. The public just has a right to know. It's very difficult unless you can find emails or communications or a whistleblower who says, no, they said, let's get Kavanaugh. We don't care if it's true. Mm-hmm. That's very difficult to prove. And and it really makes life miserable for public figures. I don't oftentimes have compassion for Hollywood people. But sometimes I do. I think, man, you can't go to the store and buy a frozen pizza without the paparazzi snapping pictures. I can see where that would really degrade your quality of life. And political figures, you think, who wants to run for politics? Who wants to put their family through this kind of garbage?
There's basic due diligence items that are supposed to be a part of journalistic standards. And one of them would be to call the person you're writing about who was the alleged victim and corroborate their story. Or at least ask them, did this happen? Do you recall this happening? But apparently the New York Times did not make the phone call to the alleged victim.
And that's and the reason why people don't trust the New York Times along with other mainstream media outlets is because it's clear that the reason they didn't do this due diligence is because they want to get Kavanaugh.
Right.
And they like want to get Donald Trump. And so people go, well, I'm not going to trust anything you do from here on out because I think your motives are skewed.
Right. And let's not forget, this is the same New York Times that last week, in their coverage on the morning of 9/11, tweeted that it was airplanes that took aim and brought down the World Trade Center. They since have issued a correction on that. A few days prior to that, they put out one of those on this day in history things that every news outlet does, virtually every news outlet. And the New York Times said, on this day in history, Mao Zedong passed away. He was a revolutionary among revolutionaries. Other people would say he was a mass murderer. And then you can go back before weeks and months before that. They put out an anti-Semitic cartoon that a lot of people took issue with. They issued a correction and said, we're not going to do political cartoons. At some point in the last couple of months, if it's been even that long, they had an editor get demoted because of something he or she approved and went to print that was wrong.
You know, Walker, you mentioned earlier about journalistic standards, and that used to protect journalism in this country because there was self-policing.
Yeah.
Fred has talked about many times. He was in the media in Canada, which is publicly owned, I think, the Canadian Broadcasting Company or corporation, and you had editors who were trained in, with journalistic standards and said, no, you can't put that in there. That reflects your opinion. Your opinion cannot appear in it. It needs to just be the story. You used to protect the integrity of the news media because there was self-policing. Now it looks like the New York Times is falling apart because you have people who are not trained in those journalistic standards. Mm-hmm. Fred says the standards have changed. Now journalism is all about promoting social justice and your viewpoint, and now you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. And I don't know how the news media is going to survive with its integrity intact because of these kinds of missteps. These are huge for the New York Times. So, all right, folks, we're going to take a short 2-minute break or so. We'll have more news when we come back. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. If you want to watch the programming, you can go to either Facebook or YouTube, search for Today's Issues, and you can watch this program online. Again, take a couple of minute break, and we'll be back with more news on Today's Issues.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios in the Morning.
They are acting out in various ways around the country to undermine our process. And right now they're attacking the Supreme Court. That's not the only thing they're doing, but under the banner of Demand Justice.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, you've been hearing about our Holy Land tour coming up in March, March 12th through the 20th. Well, it's filling up. In fact, I expect us to be full in the next few weeks. So if you're interested in going with us, if this is your bucket list trip and maybe this is the year you'd like to go, just go to the website twholyland.com. twholyland.com. You know, the great thing about our trip to the Holy Land is experiencing it with brothers and sisters from across the country, many of whom listen to American Family Radio and support American Family Association. So you're going to be with folks of like mind and like spirit. We're going to have a wonderful time visiting Israel. So for more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. When Democrats slander red state Americans, that story next. Todd Starnes here, and America is facing a great danger as socialism and secularism continue to grip our nation. The left is not holding back in this culture war, and neither can we. That's why Liberty University's mission of training the next generation of faith-based conservative leaders is so vital. Their students know the value of free enterprise and individual freedom, and they will fight for it. So join me in supporting the next generation of conservative leaders. Visit liberty.edu/Starnes today. Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, has made a name for himself on the campaign trail, peddling his own version of the Gospels, telling others not to judge while he casts judgment. But Mayor Pete's hypocrisy is especially nauseating. During the recent Democrat debate on ABC, he made an especially ugly comment about those of us who want to secure the border.
Do you think that people who support President Trump and his immigration policies are racist?
Anyone who supports this is supporting racism. Este es racismo y es sencillo. The only people, though, who actually buy into this president's hateful rhetoric around immigrants are people who don't know any.
You know, it's been said, better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman and Chris Woodward, reporter for OneNewsNow.com. All right, well, we were talking about fall weather and the fact that we don't have to go out and work out in the yard, get our clothes dirty. But if we did get our clothes dirty, we would want to wash them in Redeem Clean detergent. What do you guys think about that transition?
I think that's a great idea.
That's pretty good, huh?
How long did it take you to come up with that?
I just came just off the top of my head. Lynn Ingram with Redeem Clean is joining us on the phone. Good morning to you, Lynn.
Great segue, guys. You took something really remote and made an awesome segue into that. That's awesome.
Well, and the fact is, Lynn, I take so much time and so much care doing the laundry at my house. My wife, if she's listening, is rolling with laughter. So, hey, listen, I have a question for you, Lynn. Okay.
Yeah, lay it on me.
We're talking about Redeem Clean, and of course, first thing we want you to do is tell our listeners what Redeem Clean is, but the smell of Redeem Clean is awesome. I also want to know, though, when you're going to have a version of Redeem Clean that smells like spaghetti sauce, because you could really corner the market for Italians if clothes came out smelling like spaghetti sauce. I'm just telling you. Tell our listeners about Redeem Clean and tell us.
Do we need a refried bean smell also?
Okay, now you're getting in dangerous ground there. So tell us a little about a Redeem Clean and also what is the smell of Redeem Clean that's so awesome?
Let me tell you, Jim Duncan and I'm in West Texas and the gym's in Central Texas. We've been longtime listeners of AFA and AFR for a long time. We value what they do, what y'all do every day. You're on the front lines of what you do. You know, your message is unwavering. It's unchanging. and we wanted to figure out a way to maybe support you guys in a different way. So we developed this line of products called Redeem Clean, and the proceeds of those Redeem Clean go to AFA and AFR to support ministries, however y'all feel like they need to be distributed to get the best bang for the dollar. Our fragrance, you will not smell this anywhere else. Most fragrances in almost every product are stock fragrances, lavender, cherry, vanilla, and some of these others. Ours is a custom blend that we did that we developed over a couple of years just for this AFA product, this AFA line of products. And we like it. We love it. To me, it kind of smells like bubble gum, which I love bubble gum.
Okay. All right. And so
you cannot get that fragrance anywhere else unless you can figure out a way to blend it. And that's what we worked on for a couple of years, Ed.
Okay. All right. So I'm just going to make one last pitch here before we let you go, Lynn. So the spaghetti sauce smell, that's not really going to happen. That's just in my own dreams.
In probably some markets, it'd be a killer good seller, but in West Texas, it probably wouldn't sell that well.
Yeah, maybe the north end of Boston, or certain neighborhoods in New York and Philadelphia. So you're just saying it's not going to be a real. You're not going to have a lot of people asking for it, huh?
You know, we get our best ideas from listeners, and that's a good one. I'll tell Jim, maybe they'll give him something to work on. Okay.
Or I'll tell you what. Yes, sir. Work on these kinds of targeted colognes. I know that's outside of your expertise, but listen, the smell of popcorn, the smell of spaghetti sauce, those kind of things, smell of tacos, whatever.
Barbecue.
I'm telling you, that could be your next big thing there. So
you may be onto something, Ed.
Yeah, if I was onto it, I'd do it myself if it was a real thing. All right, Lynn. Hey, thank you so much. We love Redeem Clean. Thank you for what you and Jim have done. Thank you for your faith in American Family Association and American Family Radio. We have great listeners, great supporters, and we really do feel like we're partners with those folks in trying to bring America back to godly principles. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Walker, for what y'all do. Have a great day.
Appreciate it.
All right, you too, Lynn. Bye. I love those guys. Mm-hmm. They are just such good hearts. And so anyway, sorry, didn't mean to hijack the show to bring it in the direction of my own personal goals in life. But
I am curious, when it comes to spaghetti sauce, do you make your own?
Well, I can make it. It is a very long process.
Yeah.
To make real, according to my mom's recipe. What we normally do is we start with some good jarred sauces now, and then we add some stuff to it.
Okay.
And it just takes it's an all day thing to make spaghetti sauce, a big pan of spaghetti sauce, the right way, and we just don't have the time to do it.
I just see on like television and film and stuff where the Italians will say I make my own sauce, or I go to this place because they have fresh pasta and they make their own sauce.
Yeah, it's a generation ago when life wasn't so busy and maybe they knew something that we don't, people would take a lot of time. And then they would eat those meals around the table. Listen, for young families like y'all's, try to have supper around the table.
Oh, sure.
And conversation. And, my sisters and I, we got in trouble a lot around that table, but we also had a lot of great conversations. Learned a lot, picked up a lot, and a lot of laughter, too.
Right. So. Steve Jordahl came across this headline last week, and he may have actually talked to you about it. You guys may have talked about it on the program. I think it was a study out of the U.K. which found like an overwhelming number of families in the U.K.
It was a third.
Yeah.
It was a third.
They don't talk at dinner because they don't know what to talk about.
Silent. Yeah. And I thought, well, I don't know whether they're all on their phones or whether they just have nothing. That was pretty sad.
Yeah.
I did talk to Steve about it.
It's tempting to, after a long day, to sit in your recliner and eat dinner.
Yes, it is.
Especially as a male. Yeah. Pretty tempting.
Yeah.
But
I've done that plenty.
Me too. I may or may not have done that last night. No, sitting down for family dinner is very important.
Yeah,
right.
It is. All right. What else we got, Chris?
Well, I want to kind of continue on our discussion about judicial nominees. We were talking before the break about Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh and the situation he's battling with these allegations from various liberals and whatnot. Last week, and we talked about this last Thursday when I was appearing on the show, the Senate last week approved something like the 150th judicial nominee from President Trump. And for those not aware, the president is responsible for nominating more than just Supreme Court justices, but federal judges, appeals court judges, things of that sort, which is why a lot of people say elections matter. We're not just electing a president. We're deciding the court for years or decades to come. I have some sound here. This is Senator Josh Hawley, the new senator from the state of Missouri. And speaking on Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Senator Hawley said this will be one of President Trump's most lasting legacies. Clip two.
And there's still a lot of work to do, Tony. There are still almost 100 open seats on the federal courts at all levels. That's a bunch of seats. That's a bunch of judges. We need to fill those with pro-Constitution men and women. This is something that will matter for America, for our country, for not just the next 2 or 3 years, but for the next 30 and 40 and 50. I mean, President Trump is going to have the chance to appoint something like a quarter or a third of the entire federal judiciary.
I don't know in my lifetime that a president has had this much to decide.
No,
no, fact, no, this is historic.
In fact, when the number came out last week, the 150, that was, I think, like 50 more than President Obama at the same point in time in his first term.
So. From a percentage standpoint, like per capita percentage, President Trump is number two in all presidents to nominate the most judges, and the only person to beat him is George Washington.
Oh, wow.
Because George Washington obviously
he had nowhere to go but
appointed all of the original judges.
Right.
And now, it wasn't numerical-wise, George Washington obviously didn't appoint hundreds,
right.
Maybe like a dozen. I don't know the exact number, but probably under 100 initially. But from a percentage standpoint of all the vacancies, President Trump is number two behind George Washington.
And I'll tell you this. This is the most important thing out of all the issues that we're facing in our country. The federal judiciary, the Supreme Court, because progressives have invested that branch, the judiciary, with such power, it has basically been the most powerful branch because of those efforts. And it's ironic that the very people who invested so much power in the judiciary may soon complain about the decisions that the judiciary begins to hand down. That you wanted them this powerful, now with constitutional judges. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe more than any other issue, save a national catastrophe, a nuclear attack or those kinds of things.
Right.
As he was saying, who's this, Josh Hawley?
Yeah, Senator Hawley.
Senator Hawley was saying, we're talking about affecting our country for the next 30 or 40 years, and if President Trump wins re-election and gets another 4 years, I mean, he could really influence this country culturally, politically,
right.
Morally,
yeah.
For the life, not only our lifetime, but our children into our grandchildren.
Yeah, lives. And the problem really has not been that we don't have conservative legislators or governors, but we've had a bad judicial system, generally speaking, where states like Texas, Mississippi, various states, even California, Proposition 8, states pass good laws and then they get struck down by rogue judges.
Right.
That's been a major problem. So overturning the judiciary in a positive way is very important.
And right. So whatever else you say about President Trump, his tweets or his, views on this or his attempt to build the wall or any of those kind of things, this to me is the hallmark of his administration thus far and perhaps his most lasting political legacy.
Right. You are the king of segues because talking about his tweets and his behavior and his rhetoric and things like that, speaking to Fox and Friends this morning, Cassie Dillon of the website Lone Conservative said results are more important than rhetoric. Clip 9.
And while the president is a very, You know, he says things that I don't agree with all the time and the way he says it, but he has results. He's delivered on many promises that are really important to me. Look at the Supreme Court. Look at moving the embassy in Israel. Look at all these different foreign policy achievements he's made. So while I don't like some things he tweets or says, I do want to vote for him. I voted for him in 2016, and I didn't know what we were going to get. As a conservative, mm-hmm. I didn't know how close he'd actually stay to conservative values. But now he's proven himself. So now I know that my vote is secure in the next election, and I think a lot of other people are going to feel the same way.
Now, the reason she was on Fox and Friends is because she went on Twitter saying, you know, I wouldn't be friends with him, but I'm going to vote Trump.
Yeah, and the context, in addition to that, mm-hmm. was there, Andrew Yang, she put out a tweet saying that I would be friends with Andrew Yang. It's a Democrat presidential mm-hmm. candidate. I would be friends with Andrew Yang, but I would vote for President Trump.
Huh.
Basically saying, if I want to hang out with somebody, I'll probably pick one of the Democrats. Yeah. But if I'm going to vote for a president, I'm going to vote for Trump.
So now, who was this?
Cassie Dillon.
She's a conservative.
Yeah, she was at Values Voter Summit last year. And I interviewed her about that going into it. She was on a panel with Casey Maddox.
She heads up a group called Lone Conservative.
Yeah.
Okay. She's out of California.
What's funny is President Trump saw her tweet and then copied it and like responded to it.
He said, I'm okay with
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And then she was like, oh, you know, and then her notifications blow up.
And he's,
you know,
like she's that. Right. And I wrote an article on this several months ago talking about policy over personality. And this it very relevant with President Trump. And that is that we have to let policy be the driving force of who we vote for. Even just putting Trump aside,
yeah.
any election, even before Trump, after Trump, policy should be king, the saying is.
Right.
You know, policy should be king. And personality is important, but it shouldn't be the sole driver.
Right.
Because you can have a great personality and be a horrible
yeah.
leader.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So you can be the rudest person and be a great leader. So policy has to be the driver.
And we all frequently kind of make establish these sorts of principles mm-hmm. regarding interpersonal relationships because, you know, I look at what in terms of friends, I'll look more at what you do rather than what you say. Lots of people mm-hmm. can talk a good game. Yeah. I want to look at what you do to determine, does this person have character? Is this the kind of yeah. person I want to invite to my home? Well, you may say you're a really good Christian, but if your life shows something opposite, then I'm going to say, well, his words don't line up with his yeah. deeds. So most of the time we look at what you do as opposed to what you say. Now, if you can get somebody who says the right things, does the right things, and has a great personality,
sure.
that's a person who's going to go places.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, so far with what President Trump has done, a lot of conservatives are happy with that.
Yeah, that's like Senator Cruz. You know, many people, not only during the 2016 election, but during the primary last year, I heard several people say, you know, Ted Cruz just doesn't have a really good personality. You know, he always talks like he's arguing before a court. And,
right.
You know, he doesn't look good on camera, blah, blah, blah. But to me, I'm a guy, I don't really care about all that. You know, like Ed said, is it a plus? But Ted Cruz is a great senator and has great beliefs and has done great things when it comes to his votes in the Senate. That's the driver for me. But there are other and women, statistically speaking, women seem to care a little more about personality
right.
and interactions with someone than men do. But Senator Cruz is another example of how that's been discussed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, talking about, you know, saying and doing things, in recent days, people that just, for whatever reason, get out of bed looking for something to protest ICE about, they decided to start protesting outside the Microsoft flagship store in New York City. These protesters don't like that Microsoft contracts out with ICE. ICE uses Microsoft software and stuff like that on government computers, things of that nature. So these people started gathering in mass outside the Microsoft store in New York City, and they were saying, hey, hey, ho, ho, this is what happens when you do business with ICE or something of that nature.
That's catchy.
Yeah, I wrote that myself. And speaking on Fox and Friends about it today, former ICE acting director and Fox News contributor Tom Homan said, this is ridiculous. Clip one.
Go to the ICE website, ICE.gov, and see what ICE does. Do they really want to stop a company from helping ICE arrest thousands of child predators that prey upon children? They want to shut down an agency that have rescued thousands of children from these predators. shut down an agency that has seized enough opioids in this country to kill every man, woman, and child twice? Do they really want to stop the agency that stops technology from going overseas in the wrong hands, like missile technology, mm-hmm. that kills our warfighters? Or the second largest federal agency on the Joint Terrorism Task Force, we prevent a lot of terrorists from coming to this country through visa security program. Mm-hmm. They arrested 127,000 criminals off the streets of this country last year, not just illegal aliens, those that committed crimes against U.S. citizens. Right. And they want this company to stop working with us? Study the issue. If you want change, if you want to affect change, go to the Hills of Congress and tell them to make change. But don't, you know, this is ridiculous. Study the issue. If you study the issue, you would thank ICE rather than vilifying them.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, including these protesters. Yeah, like I think a lot of people just realize ICE is just literally the entity that watches the border. How many people listening to that clip before we played it?
They don't even have operations on the border. They're an internal agency. They do internal enforcement.
In a way, it's shocking to me that Tom Homan expects these kinds of people to study the issue. True. These people aren't about facts. They are about being woke. They are about patting one another on the back. They are about revolution. And these people probably know all that and still don't care.
Mm. That's true.
And but here's the thing. Microsoft is an extremely liberal company.
Yeah.
And this is where this revolution kind of eats its own, you know? I mean, because they go after some of the most liberal companies in the country that probably agree with everything they're saying, but because they sell software to ICE, they're bad guys. There's nothing you can do to please these knuckleheads.
Yeah, yeah. The these people, talking about the left and the people who are protesting ICE, I mean, this is scary. Because the left, generally speaking, is they have taken the mantle, are taking ownership of the movement that is aimed at undermining law enforcement. I mean, you think about it, whether it's throwing water or a milkshake on police officers in New York when they're helping someone change a tire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you have firefighters, and this is over in Europe, but firefighters can't go. They can't go to a fire alone now. They have to have a police escort because they get bottles thrown at them when they're trying to put out a fire.
Yeah.
That's in Europe, not in America. But all these people are going after the same people that are there to protect them. The same thing as with ICE. Their job is to enforce immigration laws domestically, meaning deport people mm-hmm. who shouldn't be here, including people who are convicted felons, people who are murderers, people who are rapists, their job is to deport them, but it's all about undermining our law and order system.
Well, these are anarchists. That's generally speaking what these kinds of Marxist revolutionaries are all about. This is the metaphor. It's a very simple metaphor, but this is what I believe is behind these kinds of obviously potentially self-harming ideas. Mm-hmm. You would think, do we really want anarchy? Do we really want to make the job of police harder? Doesn't that come back to bite you, even as the people protesting in the street? Well, here's the metaphor I like to use. What these Marxist revolutionaries want is to tip over the canoe with the hopes that they can come up with the paddles. And the chaos that occurs because of their ideas and their actions is meant to give them a chance to grab power.
Hmm.
Their hope is they can grab power and then right the ship, so to speak, right the canoe, and then they paddle it in the direction they want. That's why they do things that you go, what are you hoping to accomplish by causing such chaos and such anarchy, by letting the borders open, by getting rid of ICE, by making the job of police so much harder? Well, it's so that they can come up with the paddles at the end of the day, and then they hope they can be the ones in charge.
That's one thing I've noticed is that the left, they take the shortcut, which is often the illegal cut.
Right.
They don't go, how can we amend the Constitution to implement our agenda, or how can we pass legislation to implement our agenda? No, Obama does executive orders that are illegal. They hire George Soros funds prosecutorial races across the country for district attorney seats and attorney general seats like Keith Ellison in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. They do all this so that they can get in charge of the enforcers, the rule enforcers, so that they can choose which rules they want to enforce and which ones they don't to advance their political agenda.
Which, we, to our earlier discussion about the judiciary, that is why earlier in the century, in the 20th century, they started trying to prime the pump to put these kinds of activist judges on the bench, because then you don't have to amend the Constitution, Walker.
That's right.
You don't have to convince voters. You just have judges on the bench who say, this is the way it's going to be. That is the way Roe versus Wade was designed to operate. We're gonna make the decision once and for all. They thought the debate would cease after that. It didn't. Kicked it into high gear, really. But that is the progressive way, and again, air quotes, the regressive way of trying to change our society. It is always a power grab.
Yeah.
And it's never about the way democracy or our republic was designed to function, which is I try to convince you, you try to convince me, we go to the ballot box, we vote, may the best man, may the best woman win.
Yeah.
They're not interested in that. These are, at heart, Marxist, these are revolutionaries with Marxist ideals, whether they even know they're Marxist or not. And it's just a will to power.
Yeah. Well, there is hope for America, and I think this is the great way to come up on the end of the segment here. There is hope for America. I'm not sure what state this is, but this is audio of a doorbell camera showing 5-year-old Preston Satterthwaite saying the Pledge of Allegiance outside his home.
Clip All right, 10. Now, okay, before we play that, so this is a doorbell camera. So this is people have this to catch burglars and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It inadvertently caught this boy.
This little boy, yes. Okay. Clip 10.
Pledge allegiance to the fact of the United States of America, to the Republic, for which it stands, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now, we won't play this since we're coming up on the end of the show. The father and the little boy, Preston, they were on Fox and Friends today, this morning, talking about this very thing. And basically, they had some crime in the area, maybe something stolen off their front porch, things like that. And so mom said to dad, hey, let's put in a doorbell camera. And that's what led to this. The little boy outside, in court, according to one news report, the 5-year-old's sweet showcase of American pride was captured on the family's doorbell camera. He was wearing his pajamas and a bike helmet still on.
It was priceless. I watched it this morning.
I mean, like, God bless America. If your child doesn't know the Pledge of Allegiance, or maybe they don't do it in school for whatever reason, I recommend that you talk about it with them and why it's important. That's just my 2 cents.
He and his dad, you may have just said this, but my problem is sometimes I miss what you say because I'm reading the news article. But his dad and the dad and son went on a bike ride, got back to the house, and that's why he's in his bike helmet and pajamas. So the kid jumps off the bike while the dad's not looking and runs to the front door to sing the national anthem and salutes the flag or puts his hand over his heart. And his dad doesn't know. And his dad's yelling for him. And the son, he ran away just so he could go do the Pledge of Allegiance, and then he ran back.
Well, let me tell you, I think the good news is, as you're talking about, Chris, I think there are a whole lot more people like that and that family in this country that love America. They want to do things, Walker, politically speaking, the right way.
Yeah.
They don't want to just try to grab power and force their neighbors to fall in line. I think there are a lot more people like that, and we can thank the Lord for that.
Right.
So,
amen.
Parents, that's an encouragement. Teach your kids about history, obviously about Jesus and about the Bible, but about history, how our government works, etc. And they will remember it. All right, folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news. We'll come back with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.